Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Well, this is February 1st, which means it's the first day of Black History Month. Typically, when we think of Black history and Black Americans, we're picturing African Americans in the United States, right? Well, we discuss the history of slavery in this country or Jim Crow and the Civil Rights era. We think of icons like Martin Luther King Jr., Rosa Parks, maybe Jackie Robinson. But maybe this conception of Black history should be more Latino as well. After all, the first Black Americans were not brought to the United States, as we think of it, but instead arrived at the colonial island of Hispaniola, where modern-day Haiti and the Dominican Republic are located. So one of the things this show will do for Black History Month is have a conversation about Afro-Latino history every Wednesday, beginning right here, right now, on February 1st. So now some history of Hispaniola and the first Black Americans. With us for this is Lisetta Costa Cornell, assistant professor in the Department of Race and Ethnic Studies at the Borough of Manhattan Community College, part of CUNY, of course. She was also part of the CUNY Dominican Studies Institute's research project, Los Primeros Negros, or the First Blacks, who later became the ancestors of Black Dominicans. So, Professor Acosta, thank you so much for joining us for this. Happy Black History Month, and welcome to WNYC.
Buenos dias. Thank you. Good morning.
This term, First Blacks, what does it actually refer to and what prompted the research?
It refers to, thank you for having us, the Department of Ethnic and Race Studies here, BMCC, in my representation. Thank you, Ryan, and everyone, and thank you, listeners. The First Blacks refers to the first free and enslaved Africans, the first Blacks to be in Hispaniola after the arrival of Christopher Columbus, because there were Blacks already in Brazil with the colonization through the Portuguese already. And what prompted the research is the fact that there's still a lack of literature, scholarship being produced about those first Blacks and the African ancestors of the Dominican Republic, which then served as the pioneering enterprise of the transatlantic slave trade. And this is why it was important for Professor Anthony Stevens Acevedo, who spearheaded this project, and all of us involved, to make sure that we provided primary sources to scholars for them to learn more about the first Blacks, because there is scholarship produced in the Dominican Republic, but unfortunately, multilingual scholars, many of them don't speak Spanish, and they don't know the real history of the Dominican Republic, and mostly focus on race identity and really don't discuss where that race identity issue comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we can include listeners in this conversation, of course, so Dominican and Haitian mm-hmm. listeners. We have a few prompts for you. How do you or your family members relate to the other half of the island? Do you think of your country's history as Black history? Do you consider yourself Black? Dominicans, do your family members or yourself identify with another term like Moreno or Indio? Also, feel free to share some of your family's personal history. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer, as we start a series every Wednesday during Black History Month on Afro-Latino history. Hispaniola eventually became the first place in the continent where Black Americans and or their descendants were a demographic majority. But I see, I guess this comes from you, that there's a name of an actual first Black person on the island. You have that name?
Juan Prieto or Juan Moreno. And Prieto is to indicate very, very dark. And Moreno, depending on where you are in Latin America, is to indicate Black, for instance, in Cuba. is to indicate that you are black. If you say moreno in the Dominican Republic, is to say that you are slightly lighter. You are at a lighter shade on the black side. And the other name that he's known by is by Juan Portugués. So historically, he's been documented as Juan Prieto, Juan Moreno, Juan Portugués, who was a free black who arrived in Haiti, because the island was first called Haiti, who arrived in Haiti with Christopher Columbus in the first voyage of 1492 as Columbus's servant.
So how did the black population go from a singular Juan Moreno, Juan Prieto, to the majority of the island's inhabitants?
Right. There were other free blacks who arrived in the island. There is a registered, known, documented free black woman from the hospital who is known as the person to have instituted the first medical light facility in the Americas. She welcomed people in her hut. She cured them. And she also received donations from the vecinos of the village. And vecinos was a word that was used to refer to white colonists. So that's important to highlight. And then in 1503, the Spaniards, after the arrival of Governor Nicolás de Obando, and I don't want to get into this historical lecture, but the first enslaved blacks arrived to work the gold mines. And immediately after they arrived, the governor wrote to the Spanish crown and said, do not send any more blacks because they're running away and we cannot control them, immediately in 1504, 1505. And subsequently, for the next decade, free blacks arrived in the island. They were requesting travel licenses, but also enslaved blacks that were being brought as personal enslaved people for personal use. And it was not until 1518 that you have the first shipment of traffic humans, a quantity of 4,000. And this is when the Spaniards signed a decree that they called an asiento. That was the contract that was given to traffickers allowed to traffic the enslaved Africans. Before and that is the beginning of the transatlantic slave trade in what today is the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, and before we take a phone call, and Sarah in the Bronx, we see you're going to be first. You're talking about 1518. So when we hear the 1619 project, and one of the successes of that project is that more or less everybody knows that date now, right, for the arrival of the first enslaved Africans on the U.S. mainland, you're talking about 100 years earlier when the first enslaved Africans arrived on Hispaniola, the island that is now the Dominican Republic and Haiti. Why did the Spanish choose to go to Africa to obtain slaves?
They saw the opportunity, how the success of the Portuguese, and they wanted to explore. And because of how the hemisphere was divided through a papal bull, they had to negotiate and use the Portuguese as middlemen to get cheap labor from Africa and traffic them to the Americas.
Sarah in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling in. Hi, Sarah.
Thank you, Brian. Okay. Thank you. I'm so happy to be the first. And thank you to your speaker for this history. So I am from the Dominican Republic. I've been in New York for, I don't know, 60 years. I'm very light-skinned Dominican, but I have very curly hair. You obviously can see that I'm a woman of color. But it wasn't until almost 20 years ago that I started identifying myself with being Afro-Latina. And as you speaker might know, there is this history of we're always trying to avoid being black in the Dominican Republic. And my father was very dark. I always thought he was born in the Dominican Republic, but it was about 20 years ago that I found out he was actually from the British Virgin Islands. And that opened up something even bigger for me, where I started to kind of identify and recognize the history, not only the struggle, but the successes and how much we work to better ourselves. And I just, all I want is to be able to reach out to my Latina, Afro-Latina women of color identify yourself with African, because we have such a rich history, and we need to be able to say, I am Black. I'm not just Dominican. I'm also Black. And it's something that once we do that and you start wearing your hair and doing all the things that identify you with your race, it's so empowering. So thank you for the segment, Brian. I really love it.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Professor Acosta, that must be music to your ears, right? Somebody with that sense of history and light-skinned Dominican, as she described herself, identifying that broadly.
And I think that in her case, Sarah, our listener, right?
Yes, yes.
I think that in her case, she's a light-skinned Dominican. There is a saying in the Dominican Republic, and Ginetta Candelaria wrote a book, Black Behind the Ears, El Negro Detrás de la Oreja. Everyone is Black because you will find it in the back of your ear if you do some digging. And Carlos Esteban David wrote the book, Where is Your Grandmother? ¿Y tu abuela dónde está? And that is to say, when you say, oh, I'm Dominican, but my ancestors are from Spain. And then you would ask, ¿y tu abuela? ¿Dónde está? Where's your grandmother? Get her out of the closet. Where are your great-grandparents? Let's see what they look like. But Brian, I want to go back to something because you mentioned the 1619 Project and the century between 1518, which is when the first asiento was signed, right, for the enslaved to arrive. But I also want to point out that before 1619, in about 1526, I know that it's before 1530, approximately 100 enslaved Africans were brought to North America with the Spaniards who attempted to colonize North America. And there was a settlement near Georgia. They call it San Miguel de Guadalupe. And we already know the history with the Spaniards in Florida. So I just wanted to make sure that we know that the Black history and presence in the U.S. goes way, way back.
And who else, listeners, who's Dominican or Haitian, wants to tell a story of your family, your identity, ask a question of our guest, Lisette Acosta Cornillo, from the Department of Race and Ethnic Studies at the Borough of Manhattan Community College, as we talk about Afro-Latino history on the island of Hispaniola today, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Tell us a little of your family story, your identity. Ask a question, 212-433-9692. What happened to the Taínos? The indigenous people on Hispaniola, if it became Black majority so quickly?
The majority of the Taíno population, the Taíno Arawak population, unfortunately started to disappear because of diseases, because of the hard labor. But contrary to what many people believe, there is documented information that you still found, despite the small numbers, Taino presence in the 1560s, Hispaniola. Even in 1580, I just saw a colleague of mine who found this document, and the woman is described as mestiza. And even in the 1606 census of Hispaniola, there is a small, very small number of Taínos reported. That the country itself, in terms of our phenotype, that has been debatable, but in the DNA it has been traced in the Dominican people who have been interested in doing this type of experience. And of course, it's still in our culture.
Right. And Hispaniola, again, for people who don't know, is the island that now includes the Dominican Republic and Haiti. When and how did Hispaniola get divided between the French and the Spanish? How did those divisions come about?
Oh, well, we're going to need a whole show, Brian. But
give us the radio soundbite version of God knows how much history.
Okay, so the Spaniards arrived there, and the island is Haiti. Right? 1492. They decide that they're going to call it La Española, meaning belonging to Spain, or what we know in English as Hispaniola. The entire island is populated, and it is known as Hispaniola. However, in the early 17th century, in 1610, mid 1600, the French slowly started moving in into the island, and eventually they settled on La Tortua or Torta Island, which today belongs to Haiti. And they slowly began to take territory. The Spaniards, they said, you know what? It's too many of them. They're not causing any trouble. They can stay under Spaniard political reign, but they can do their own thing, right? And what happened was that the Spaniards realized that that side of the island was thriving, and they were producing sugar, they were producing slaves, they were producing coffee. And eventually the Spaniards, they said, you know what? Okay, we're going to divide it, and you're going to be French Saint-Domingue, and we're going to be Spanish Santo Domingo. And this unofficially happened in the late 1600s. However, in 1697, through a treaty, the Treaty of Ryswick, they officially divided it, but they didn't create a border. And then, it was French Saint-Domingue, Spanish Santo Domingo. Then we had the Haitian Revolution in 1791, and through France and Spain, they go to war. And in 1795, with the Treaty of Basel, they now, Spain cedes Spanish Santo Domingo to France. So now the island is French for a very short period of time, because then Toussaint Louverture went over to Spanish side and freed the enslaved. That is the first abolition that we have in what today is the Dominican Republic. But then Haiti declares its independence in 1804. And the French invade Santo Domingo, the Spanish side. So now we are ambivalent on our side. And Haiti is, for the first time, Haiti. And then we are in 18, we again are ambivalently Spanish Santo Domingo. But in 1822, with the Haitian invasion, we are Haiti, the entire island. And in 1844, we are, for the first time, the Dominican Republic with the Dominican independence, NIP. And then in 1863-61, again, with the arrival of the Spaniards, even the soldiers, as Anne Eller says in her book, We Dream Together, the soldiers were saying, wait, so where are we going? How do we call this? We don't know anymore. So then you have, again, Spanish, or what was the Dominican Republic in 1844, that we don't know who we are. And the other side is ID. And then through the Restoration War in 1865, we are again the Dominican Republic and ID. And that's what it has been since then.
And we're going to have to stop there in 1865. That was fascinating. So that we have time to get some more stories on here. And by the way, Ali and Hollis, we see you, that you want to challenge the term Afro-Latino. We're going to get to you. But let's hear a few more family stories first. Daniel in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate that.
Of course.
Good morning, Daniel.
So, yes, I'm from the Dominican Republic. I've been here in the United States for 11 years. I have a short story about my oldest daughter. When she was about 3-4 years old, her godfather got her 2 Barbie dolls, one black, one white. And this is a true story. My daughter, I didn't notice in the beginning. My friend, her godfather, was the one who noticed. Did you notice that she's not playing? She hasn't played with the black doll. That's like days after he got her the dolls. And then I started to, I said, let me take a look at that. So I started looking at that, and it was true. She wasn't playing with the black doll. So I asked her, why don't you play with the black doll? Because the white doll is more beautiful. I said, well, what's your color? Look at your color. Look at the black doll. Because I'm black. My father was Haitian, and my mom was Dominican. However, I don't even have my father's last name, because I didn't meet my father until I was like 11 years old, for the same reason with the back and forth between the Dominican Republic, not in a good way, and Haiti.
So what did mm-hmm. your daughter say? And forgive me for moving you along. I want to get a few callers in here. What did your daughter say when you said, look at your own skin color?
Yes, my daughter, initially, she's thinking that in her brain, the white doll is more beautiful than her own color.
It's
so when I asked
doll.
Her, but the black doll is your own color. So she started to look at it differently. And after that, I mean, from that point on, she started to look at life, you know, with the black is beautiful. That's
Daniel,
the bottom
that's
line.
A great story. A great story of mm-hmm. great parenting, it sounds like. Max in Manhattan, you're
Thank
on
you,
WNYC.
Daniel.
Hi, Max.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thank you. Tell us your story.
We're great.
My story is that, you see, my mom was from a part of the Dominican Republic. It's called Bani. And mostly the people there are just white people, you know. And my father is from San Pedro de Macorís, which, you know, it's like really dark. So I'm a mixture. But what I understood mm-hmm. was, you know, that the black came to the island was because the Spanish people were enslaving, you know, the Indians. So it was a lot of abuse there. So they decided, mm-hmm. you know, to bring the black from Africa. So that's how mm-hmm. they wind up there, you know. Was not because, you know, I don't know the story, you know, but that's what I learned in the DR. You know, I'm 50 years, you know, in this country, so I don't just
That's
like,
accurate.
Well.
Max, thank you. Thank you very much. Max, how does it make you feel knowing that history?
Oh, no, you know, in my family, you know, we all mix, you know, different colors, mm-hmm. and we never experimented, you know, any racism, you know, only politics, you know. For me, you know, in the DR, the problem is, you know, it doesn't matter what color are you, you know. If you are black or whatever, if you got money, that's what counts over there, you know. Nothing
Max,
else.
Thank you very much. All right, we're going to get Ali and Hollis in here as we're starting to run out of time with Professor Acosta Cornille from Manhattan Community College. Ali, you want to challenge the term Afro-Latino, right?
Yes, sir. Good morning to you and the professor. My name is Ali Abdul Perez. And I was born in the Caribbean, in the largest Caribbean island, okay, in the Caribbean. I've been in this country over 50 years, okay, and in that time, I have learned to identify myself as an African, not Afro. Because I've learned that an Afro, to me, and to a lot of people, you refer to a hairstyle. That's one. Number two, when you say Latin, what are you actually referring to about? Okay? A lot of people don't know. They call themselves Latin or Latino or Latina. But what are they saying? It's not Latino. It's not a race. It's not a nationality. Nor is it a heritage.
And Ali, I'm going to leave it there, because we're running out of time in the segment. But Professor Acosta Cornille, do you want to respond to him substantively? Do you use the term? I'm saying we're going to talk about Afro-Latino history every Wednesday on the show during Black History Month. Should I be saying something else?
I use the term Afro-Latina, and I use it Afro to indicate my African ancestry and Latina to refer to the geographical space that we occupy in Latin America. So that is what it means, and that's actually, there's a difference between Latino and Hispanic. Hispanic, you speak Spanish, Latino if you are from Latin America. So I think, yes, some people may reject the topic. I personally use it, and I identify as Afro-Latina.
Is there a place where people can see your work or the research that you talked about at the beginning of the segment, the First Blacks Research?
Yes, they can go to firstblacks.org, or in Spanish, the website is also in Spanish, losprimerosnegros.org, or simply come to my website at BMCC. We have the Department of Ethnic and Race Studies, and they can come to my page, look at the articles. I just published the articles, one about Elena, an enslaved woman who used to escape to dance, and that was noted as her worst flaw in the bill of sale. And Juana Helos Papelona, an insubordinate slave who testify against her owners. And that's where you can find my research. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Brian, for the space.
Thank you so much for joining us. This was fascinating and wonderful and warm. And listeners, as I said, we will be talking about Afro-Latino history every Wednesday during Black History Month here on The Brian Lehrer Show.